So basically, this is the greatest job I've ever had. I absolutely love my job.
What is it like for women and queers to work in a leadership position as an army?
And that's when you have the oh crap moments where you realize, wait, we're going to have to move these budget figures around, you know.
Hi everyone, welcome to the first episode of the DNA of RMA, the podcast from the core of research management and administration. Today I'm going to talk with Melinda Fisher, a research administrator from South Carolina, and be prepared because this conversation was intense. I had to laugh a lot, I completely lost track, I was impressed, and especially at the end I was even angry. So go listen to this powerful episode and join us while we are talking about research administration, setbacks at work, gender, misogyny, and society. Enjoy it!
The DNA of RMA, the podcast from the core of research management and administration.
We both passed!
We did it! Okay, so hello and welcome to the podcast, the DNA of RMA, the podcast from the core of research management and administration. Today I have a special guest, which is called Melinda Fisher. Hello, Melinda.
Hello, Joanna. It's very nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course, I'm so happy that we could do it. Melinda Fisher works and lives in Clemson in South Carolina. And is a research administrator there at the University of Clemson, if I got it right, just correct
me. Clemson University, correct.
Cool, okay. Melinda was an English major originally, worked as a fiscal analyst, and is right now working at the university as an RMA and accompanies researchers. Yeah, that's really cool, I think. Do you want to add something?
It is really cool. Yeah, sure. So I am a pre-award research administrator. I started out being a post-award administrator and figured out that financials were not my thing. I don't want to audit. I don't want to have to be that detail oriented. So I got into pre-award research administration, and it opened up this whole possibility of creativity and working with faculty and not having to be as dependent on pennies, which really suited my personality. So I live on a farm in the middle of the mountains here in South Carolina. I've got three dogs. I have eight cats. I have four children and 27 chickens and a husband too.
You are living my personal dream. I love that.
It's pretty great. I can't complain.
So it's lots of stuff to do.
Indeed.
So that's news to me. So I'm so happy that we could talk about that. I think we're just going to start with the first question.
Sure.
Like, how would you explain your profession to someone? Like, what's the main content of your work? I have no idea. So just
start. So basically, this is the greatest job I've ever had. I absolutely love my job. Being a pre-award research administrator means that I work with faculty to identify funding opportunities. I help them develop collaborative teams, which means I have to know lots of people, which means I get to talk a lot, which is one of my favorite things. I help them when I identify the funding opportunities. I really carefully analyze the funding opportunity to figure out what the requirements are. I create a detailed list for both of us to use to make sure that we're gathering all of the information that needs to be gathered. I work with them to develop the budget. Frequently, we meet and we'll work on the budget for half an hour or an hour. And a lot of times I do the majority of the budget. And then I also create the budget justification, which is like the words that go along with the numbers to explain to the funder what it is the faculty member intends to do on their project. And then I work with them to get all the required files onto my desk, and I do a compliance check. That's my job here at the university, is to keep the university out of the gutter, because on all research administration or on all research projects, the university is the applicant, not the faculty member. So the faculty member is really doing everything on behalf of the university. So my job is to make sure that the university doesn't end up in the newspaper. If you're interested in politics and journalism, you know how that works.
Yeah.
And then I upload all of the required files into the sponsor portal and actually submit on behalf of the university, which means I have signature authority for the university. There's a handful of us here, and I suppose it's probably like this at most U.S. universities, that a handful of individuals have the authority to actually commit resources on behalf of the university, and then also do award negotiations when the sponsor comes back and says, yes, we want to fund that project, but we want to make these tweaks. So I'm one of those people. And it's, like I said, the best job ever.
Oh, that sounds super important. So it's like you accompany researchers from the idea until the end, or are you just there for like specific time slot?
Good question. I am just here from development of the research idea through the actual submission. And then that skinny little band there for award negotiation. After the award is negotiated and the award has been accepted, I'm out of it. I don't have anything to do with the financials anymore. Thank goodness. That's really tedious work. Making sure that all the pennies are counted. That's not me. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but good question. There are post-award research administrators in every single college and department who make sure that the grant budgets are being spent out according to the proposal. And, you know, they also are compliance checkers, making sure that the university doesn't end up in the national headlines.
So that's also like an RMA, but just like a different type.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, there are several different types. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Could you just explain again maybe the difference between pre-award and post-award, just to clarify?
Sure. So pre-award positions work with faculty up until the time of submission of a grant application. So we do all of the developing. And at this point, the project is still a proposal. It's in the dream stages, you know, this is what we want. This is what we'd like to do. This is how we think we'll do it. And then when the award comes in, it flips over to post-award. And that's when you have the, oh crap moments where you realize, wait, we're going to have to move these budget figures around, you know, and the post-award research administrator has to work with both the faculty members carrying out the project and also the funding opportunity sponsor to make sure that all of the funds are expended the way that they're supposed to be expended. And it's very, very detail oriented. It's accounting, basically. So if you don't love numbers, if you don't love working with, you know, dollars, then that's probably not the field that you want to go into. A lot of that is very, you probably don't have to speak to too many people during the day. You're just sitting in front of budgets and your computer. So if you're an introvert, that might be a, you know, a good career path for you at some
That's
point.
That's good to know. Okay. Wow. And like just for your specific profession, did you need like any kind of degree or university education program, training, whatever there is?
So when I first started in this career path over 10 years ago, there was no specific education or certification required. There also wasn't, it was a burgeoning profession. So most people didn't even know what a research administrator was 10 years ago. So it was kind of something that you fell into. You know, you started out doing something completely different and then applied for a job and, you know, got it. And wow, look, I'm a research administrator.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I came into it. I just kind of fell into it. Someone said, hey, you should apply for this job. It sounds like something that would suit you. And I thought, I am not qualified for that at all. And they said, try it anyway. And so I did. And here we are, you know, like, more than 10 years later, and I love it. But now people are more intentional about getting into the field. I'm beginning to see a lot of people have advanced degrees, whether it's a master's or a PhD, and they're all over the world, there are different certification modules that people can complete to become certified in their country. Here we have RACC, R-A-C-C, the Research Administration Certification Council, and they provide education, training, and certificates for a certified research administrator, certified pre-award research administrator, and certified financial research administrator. So I hold both a CRA and a CPRA. But they're not very common. Like, I think I am the only person who holds a CPRA in the state of South Carolina. So I think those aren't as common as maybe the advanced degrees because they're so specific. I don't think anybody ever, you know, in my generation anyway, got out of high school and said, I think I want to be a research administrator when I grow up. You know, that just wasn't a thing. But now I think it can be. And I think, you know, eventually we'll start seeing undergrad degrees that kind of guide you toward research administration also, but we're not quite there yet.
So it's still like developing the whole community and the profession.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So if any young people are listening to this, maybe they can turn to this. What was it called?
RACC. That's in the US, but I know that there are other, Germany has a certification. I can't remember what it's called. And I know that the UK has one as well, but I'm not aware of any others. I'm sure if they don't exist yet, they will soon.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. So you would say it's like a growing community or?
It definitely is.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, research is growing. So yeah. More and more people believe in science, right?
Hopefully. Yeah. So, if I say, okay, I want to be a research administrator someday, what do I need? Like, would you say there are like specific skills you need or especially soft skills, which are really important or valuable?
So I think that if we look at the RAP data that I think most research administrators are aware of, the Simon Carriage and Stephanie Scott study, RAP, research administration as a profession. They kind of break that down, and I'm sure that Simon can give you better detail about that than I can, but harder technical skills are way more important to get the job, but then to keep the job and progress in the job, those soft skills are definitely more important. I think it's also based on what kind of research administration position you're in. Like for me in pre-award, communication skills and organization skills are at the very top of my must-have list, which is convenient because I have both highly developed communication and organizational skills. I think if you are in post-award research administration, you don't necessarily need the communication skills as much as you do the organizational skills. If you're not organized in post-award, you need to find something different. You can't make it. So,
all in all, it's just also a job that you need to be, for that you need to be ambitious, maybe like stick to something and not just give up after like, if it doesn't work out as planned, or
for, are you talking about research administration as a whole?
Yeah.
So when I first got this job in pre-award, I was so overwhelmed. I had the image of drinking from a fire hose. Was like every single day I was walking in and just being blasted in the face with all this information. And I told myself that I would give it 2 years. And if I still didn't know what I was doing after 2 years, then I would leave. I would find something different, but I'm still here 10 years later. So it is something that you have to make the commitment to. But I think, you know, here again, the higher incidence of certifications and education before going into the profession is probably preparing people more. I had no idea what I was doing when I first started. So it was, you know, learning as you, it was working on the plane while it was in flight. So, which was exciting.
Yeah, always look at the bright side.
Well, I am an optimist, and I also am a bit of an adrenaline junkie. So you know, both of those things worked in my favor.
Well, cool. Okay. But like, besides, if you just can't be optimistic anymore, you put so much effort, capacities into one project, and then it just doesn't work out at all. Do you keep your optimism, or do you just say, come on, fuck it, I'm not going to work it on that, I just drop this project?
So I would say that probably less than 25% of the projects that I assist faculty members with get funded.
Oh.
Yeah, less than 25%. So that's basically the majority of my work, right, is not funded. And that's pretty much the norm across most of the U.S. And it's, you know, more and more universities are requiring faculty to submit, because they want those research dollars coming into their universities. And so there's so much pressure on faculty to submit. So I anticipate that number is going to get even lower. However, instead of thinking of these as failures, I tend to look at them as opportunities, because it allows me to further develop my skills and practice, you know, what I need to be proficient at my job. And it also gives the faculty members new insights, and it also produces documents that they can recycle. I mean, you're going for an advanced degree right now. I'm sure by now you've learned that you don't create everything new, right? That there is a lot of not reinventing the wheel. There's a lot of recycling that goes on. So every single proposal that these faculty members work on that doesn't get funded has the potential to become something that is funded someday. Every single failure, you know, the successful bits get pulled out, polished, you know, reshaped, honed, and eventually become a success. Because eventually that person, if they continue trying and trying and trying and trying, eventually they will get funded. So just because they don't get funded, you know, 3 out of 4 times, doesn't mean that they're not eventually going to get funded and be successful. So it's practice is what it is.
Okay. Yeah. You just have to get used to that.
Yeah. It's like the deadlines when I've got 10 proposals due on the same day and I am killing myself and I work 15 hours that day to get it all done. And then maybe one of them gets funded. You know, those are tough days, but I also know that when I step back away from it, I know that I've done my best to help these people submit their success somewhere down the line. So,
yeah, that's so important. I'm really impressed. What a call. Yeah. I wasn't expecting that the number is so low. I mean, 25%, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, we had a 30% year and we celebrated. We were like, woo, we got 30% funded this year. You know, it was huge. And then it was like, we had to say, all right, now we know that next year we're probably not going to hit 30 mm-hmm. again. So there's just that, all right, this is good, but we're going to have to keep going.
Yeah, totally. Like, I have a totally different question. It's
okay. It's bring it, what you got?
So I've got a couple of numbers, because I wasn't just interested in you and your profession, but also in like the RMA community. And you already mentioned Simon Carriage and Stephanie Scott with their study, because it's really cool, because Simon is going to be a guest in my next episode.
Nice. He's hilarious. You'll love him.
Cool. Okay. I'm looking forward to it.
He's also super laid back.
Also, that's going to be great. Yeah, because for everyone who doesn't know it, Simon Carriage and Stephanie Scott created a study just about RMAs worldwide, and they talked about different issues. And
they looked at all of the different factors that it's basically a demographic study to begin with. They wanted to know, you know, across the world, they wanted to be able to compare countries and see what the different male versus female identifying people, you know, and ages and races and cultures. They wanted to know all of those things. So they investigated it.
they found, for example, you can see that almost 77% of RMAs identify as female, which is a lot. So just the first question, just can you imagine why the gender split in your work environment is so unbalanced? And like, why are there so many women taking this job?
So I have two theories on this. The first is, have you heard of male flight?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that that's probably got something to do with it. I feel like back in the beginning of the profession in the 50s and 60s, it was predominantly male, cis male, and they were getting paid a lot more money than females who were beneath them. And then females started saying, hey, wait a minute, I think I could do that too. And so they started coming into the profession, and then it was no longer something that those men, that generation of man, considered to be a suitable profession for them.